everybody. Welcome back to another episode of WYFP. If you don't know what that is, come on, don't bother me with it. I'm here with some of my friends today. I've got Mike Clock coming in from the great state of Michigan. Mike, how you doing, bud?
Doing pretty well. And yourself?
Doing all right. Coming in, reporting from New Jersey, we've got Nader. How you doing, Nader?
I'm doing all right.
Am I getting it right with the pronunciation? Because I fucking want to call you Nader in the worst way possible.
It's Nader. I always tell people, like, what's the matter? Like, that's sort of like the sort of rhyme that I tell people.
That's all I needed was the dumb way to say it. And coming in from the great state of Illinois, Rich Kelly, how you doing, bud?
I'm good, man. I've been in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, though, for
coming
multiple
in
years now. I can't quite recall.
From the great state of Pennsylvania, Rich yes. Kelly, what's going on, bud?
Not too much. Just working, drawing. You know how it goes.
I understand how it goes. Rich, you and I have done a couple of interviews over the year. Big fan.
Long time ago, yeah.
Big fan of your art style. You relocated out to Pennsylvania from Illinois. What brought about the move?
It's where I grew up, and my wife and I moved back here to be close to family. We have two children now, so it's great to be around the grandparents. And
Yeah. Whenever I see people that have kids in a market where their family doesn't live, I'm like, man, it must be so hard to raise kids at a constant away game, right? You need a little bit of home field advantage because from what I've seen, kids need a lot of other people other than you and your wife to make it all run.
Yeah, I don't know what we do. And interestingly, a WYFP problem, we're both trying to work and stay close to the kids. So it's huge.
What does your wife do?
She's an interiors photographer.
Oh,
and,
wow.
She'll do, you know, she'll book a couple of shoots throughout the year that take, you know, a week to 2 weeks. So when she steps out, I'm able to step in and we kind of just juggle that. Yeah.
How bad was being an interior photographer over a year where nobody wants you interior?
Yeah, it was rough. Funny enough, you know, illustration kind of grew because photography was out. So she took a hit initially, but after they, you know, got some safety things in place, she was able to jump back in.
Isn't it sort of fascinating when you look back at the history of illustration, how its relationship with photography has changed it so much? I almost feel like there was probably a dude somewhere that could illustrate anything exactly the way that it looks. And he saw a camera for the first time and goes, I'm fucked. I got to get a new job. Like,
yeah.
I almost feel like the camera forced the narrative and illustration because no longer was there a need to capture it just perfect. I mean, you know, there are people that can get it down to the essence of what it is to where you're looking at an illustration and you're waiting for the character to blink. I mean, that is still a really cool skill set. But I feel like the camera just gave other people like, hey, man, I was never really good at drawing that bowl of fruit. Game on, because I can make the fruit look like it has emotions. That fucking camera can't do that with all that gunpowder and that big curtain.
That's true. Yeah, I had I did a cover for Sports Illustrated for Kids last like Halloween-ish, and it was Lamar Jackson, and they initially were going to have a photo shoot and dress them all up like Edgar Allan Poe and whatnot. He backed out, you know, for COVID reasons. So they had me do an illustration. It's like one of the my favorite things I've made recently.
Lamar Jackson, phenomenal football player, was the QB number one for the Louisville Cardinals, now playing for the Baltimore Ravens. I'm always fascinated with somebody that's that diverse in their playability. How long does that career go for? You know, when you run that fast, when you can bail around like that, I always wonder, like, because I mean, the guy, for no good reason, did a front flip into the end zone to just clown around and score quick six on the Chiefs. I'm like, what if that is what breaks your neck and now you're paralyzed? You moron. Just go in normal style. You don't need to go in upside down style.
Yeah, you either learn that early on or you retire early on. That's it.
Yeah. Well, and he's fucking insane because he's representing himself. he doesn't have a sports agent. He's going to go in and broker his own deal, which to me, if I know anything about talented people, they are not good negotiators. They do not know what self-value is. Like, you need one of these guys who's a fucking shark. I assure you, they will make that 15% hit well worth it by going 200% beyond what you were willing to ask for.
Yeah. Yeah. If Biggie's taught us anything, it's that.
Biggie. Fucking Biggie. Hey, we have one retired person in the AID family, and they did not ever pick up a fucking pencil other than to write a check. So what's that teach us all here? So, Rich, question for you. Now being sort of a seasoned veteran, you've been working for yourself. You've been doing illustration professionally now for a long enough time to no longer allow you to be one of the new guys. How's it settling in, man? Like, do you think that with where the world's at, with having a very personalized illustration style where you are very, very far off from the camera, do you think that you see this as a career that can go the long haul as you do have kids and you're thinking about paying off homes and colleges and all that shit? Or do you start to get a little fearful that the market is getting pretty cluttered and maybe a guy who illustrates really, really well isn't enough to cut it anymore? Where do you see things going, bud?
That's a good question. Yeah, over the past 3-4 years, I've really had more of a sense of security. I've been incredibly fortunate throughout my career where I don't do a lot of promotion or reaching out to potential clients, but I feel like I'm in the right place at the right time a lot. And I've been able to work with some bigger agencies on some bigger projects, and it's just kind of snowballed to where I do feel that way. And over this past year in particular, I've been working pretty consistently with this agency in LA, and they recently approached me, speaking of, you know, WYFP, to join the staff position. So it was a lot of discussion and back and forth, a lot of discussion with my wife and I, and ultimately I declined.
Smart move.
I hope so.
No, I mean, I think for somebody like you, I just don't see you being an in-house guy unless it's someplace like, you know, this wouldn't even be a company I'd recommend you work for. But if it was somebody like Disney, where all they're doing is like artwork and always pushing the barriers, and they could use somebody like you to be sort of a character designer or a concept artist to sort of take the world and turn it upside down and give it a different perspective, I could see that. But I would feel like after a while, an advertising agency would just be like, yeah, enough with the thumb size head. Can we get something that looks normal style? Like, I could see you being pushed in that direction.
Yeah, so like one of the great projects I worked on with them was for a Netflix animation, which was super rewarding, creatively fulfilling. But lately, I mean, I love working on this stuff. It's cool, but like we're working on stuff for Apple, and it's there's no Rich Kelly in this. It's just purely deliver what they need to look like what they needed to look like, you know? And the thought of doing that 40 hours a week for who knows how long, that's ultimately one of the bigger reasons I had to say no.
Cause that's where it would go. Inevitably, that's where you would end up getting pushed to. And then the Rich Kelly style that you've worked so hard, which, I mean, I think the reason why you have security is because you existed in a time when you could create that style and get a head start.
Yeah.
On the competition. I think a kid coming out of art school right now with on par talent, on par style, I don't know that they could get the security that you have. I know I always joke and say there's no seniority in the creative arts, but there kind of is, because you get a chance to get people's attention when there's less competition, and the competition these days is thick.
Yeah. And like I said, man, that right place, right time. Yes. I'm sure we talked about it before. But when I started making posters in Chicago, that jump started everything. Connecting with Mitch and all that stuff. If I wasn't there, I wouldn't be here right now. So
Mitch
it looks a lot different these days. Yeah,
Mitch Putnam of OM GIFs, his new website. Yeah. Now that he is the JPEG master in charge over at that NFT shack that he's got going. So Rich, when you do work for Apple and we don't see you inside of that work, are you doing illustration or are you doing design?
Right now, illustration. I did some like concept stuff for some other projects, but you know, there's a style we're basically trying to make things look like they're 3D modeled, and it's very technical and just like mathematical almost, you know? So I'm working on a day rate basis with them, and I've been working with them since March of this year.
That's a lot of days.
Yeah. I mean, I'm essentially an employee.
Yeah.
But, I snuck in a couple freelance jobs to kind of get my fix on some more unique projects. And it was cool to make stuff that looks like my stuff, but it's like in the morning and evenings and it's pretty draining. So
right.
If I was to do it full time, I eventually that would kind of fall out, I'm sure.
I'm pretty fascinated to see this work when it's done, because I, no disrespect, I didn't know that you had that in your skill set. I just thought you just did, you know, fucking smash heads all day long. I didn't know that you pursued anything other than that. This is fascinating.
Yeah, some of it's, I mean, whenever we start a new project, the first week I'm like, what, how do I do this? I don't belong here. I have no idea. And then you just slowly figure it out.
Yeah.
I was joking that you just like fake it until you fake it the next day, and you just fake it forever until you die. I'm trying to learn some new stuff too. I mean, like I said, that animation project was huge. I really am fascinated and looking to get into some more animation based stuff, like traditional 2D kind of moody animation. And I've been teaching myself a lot of stuff, but to get to work on a production like that was real eye opening.
Can you say what it was?
Yeah, it was called We the People. It was on Netflix, and it was like spun as a modern day Schoolhouse Rock.
Oh.
And the episode I worked on was titled actually We the People. It was the titular episode. And the art director was this guy who I'm a huge fan of, James Nolert. So I got to connect with him. And again, it wasn't like I was making something in my style, but I was able to explore a ton of stuff, experiment with motion. And it's that kind of thing doesn't feel like a job. It's just like pure play. It's great.
It's always nice when you get to learn on somebody else's dime. I'll say that when
oh
you
my goodness,
like
yeah.
They're paying me to figure out how to do all this stuff. Because I remember back in the day, just like, yeah, I can figure that out. No problem. It'll be done by next Friday. And then I'm like, how does Flash work? How? What is a motion tween? And can I figure it out by Thursday so I can get the work done by next Friday? Well, that's all fascinating, man. That is really, really cool to hear. So any problem at bay that you showed up to discuss today, or did you just want to hang with the gang?
I was looking to hang, but yeah, I thought the position I was just in, where it was like freelancer full time, that rung true with kind of what you guys have been talking about. And we'll see if it pays off. Maybe next year you'll talk to me and I'll be doing something entirely different. We'll see.
You'll be Rich Apple, just like Tim Apple.
Yeah.
The thing is like, I feel like if you put 50 people in front of me and they were all given that opportunity of do my own thing or go for an agency, and what you're talking about, like, you know, a higher end agency in Los Angeles that probably has, you know, a dream list of clients that has a lot of momentum and a lot of juice behind it. At this point in 2021, I'm probably telling about 45 of those people to take that fucking job, you know. Yeah. In 2011, I'm probably telling 5 people to take that job. But I just see somebody like you with your skill set and talent that I don't know, man. It's like if you were to take that, a lot of that would get beaten out of you, not because they're bad people, not because they don't like what you do. It's just clients are clients, and problem solving doesn't always transcend to creative problem solving. And, you know, you do something and it is really fantastic that a lot of us are a big fan of. It's not going to be perfect for the Apple release. It's not going to be perfect for what Adidas wants. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like eventually that would get beaten out of you. And what I would worry about for someone such as yourself, if this LA, you know, conglomerate gets sucked into another one and it becomes jerk off, jerk off, jerk off and Smith, and they shuffle around the house, where are you when you've done a bunch of corporate work for 10 years and
right.
you let this thing, you know, you have a bit of momentum and a bit of juice that most people don't have. And that's why you've been able to not worry about promoting and the projects have kept falling in. I feel like that if you were to surrender that and let that go and become an in-house fuckboy, then eventually, dude, you have a portfolio that looks like everybody else's. And now when you maybe need that college money the most, you're jockeying around with everybody else with the exact same, you know, I say book and sound like an old guy, but you know, with the exact same body of work, which is right now you will have the Rich Kelly look, whatever you did for Nike, a little something that you did for Netflix. Like you can kind of show some diversity, but also really show at the core of it that you are a fine artist that decided to go commercial, which I think that's a huge angle that you have.
Yeah, all that is very true. So I'm hoping it pays off, and I think it will. We'll see.
How much of that I just said, I can say it again if you need me to, how much of that I just said was ringing through your ears when you were making this decision?
A lot of it. That was like 75% that, and then 25% like, is this going to work for our family? Because the flexibility of freelance, if you have that, it's gold. I'm able to, like, Aaron, my wife is shooting next week and I'm taking off 5 days to just hang with the kids and get some stuff done around the house. And you just can't do that.
No.
Staff. So, there's a lot of different factors, but those are the main two big ones.
And that's one of those things. There are hidden bonuses inside of freelance that a lot of people don't think about. And that flexibility is huge. I mean, I would just guess that if the stress of freelance and paying your bills doesn't kill you, being able to start whatever work time that you can start according to how your body's rhythm is, that will add years on. So on one side of the scale, we have the stress of paying your bills. That's going to take a couple of years off. But being able to start at 10 o'clock versus 7:30 and not having to commute, that's going to add some years on. So if we can just get the money going right, it sounds like we're putting years onto our life versus taking years away from our life.
Totally. And with tools nowadays, like the iPad and stuff, you can go anywhere to work. We could take a trip somewhere for a month and I could still work, you know?
Speaking of iPad, how much has that toy become a professional tool for you at this point in your career?
I feel like an old man here because I'm still struggling with it. We went to the beach and I finished up a job on the iPad Pro and it was just like, it didn't click. I was using Procreate and I'm just so keyed into Photoshop and I just assumed it would translate. I think it's a matter of just like sitting down like I'm in school, forcing myself to learn it, and then I'll be set.
Yeah, I have a trip coming up next week to Walt Disney World. And I want to put up a couple of videos while I'm there. And I'm just afraid to try to do it all on my iPad. So I'm like, you know what, PowerBook? You got one more job left in you. You're going back on the road, kid. Just because like the other night, I was doing something very simple. I wanted to rip through the internet. I wanted to find some images. I wanted to just copy them, paste them into a Photoshop document, and then adjust them to 1920, 1080, right? I'm just making slides for a YouTube video. And I grabbed my iPad Pro and I sat on the couch and I said, this is fucking confusing. What app am I going to use to resize these down? How easily can I just grab the image from Safari, worst browser ever, and get it over? And, you know, and I just looked at it and I go, you can't do this, buddy. You got to go back in the office. So I walked down the hallway, set that down, and then the iPad Pro was like, oh, or I'm sorry, the MacBook Pro was like, oh, look who's fucking coming back. Mr. fucking cool guy here, huh? Mr. I want to draw all over the screen. And I sit with my laptop in my lap, jam through 60 different slides while I'm watching The Sopranos, like I'm playing guitar. It's like I don't even have to look at the screen to do it. I had no idea how to do that in the iPad. It still is an insulated creative space that just isn't quite cracked all the way open yet for that creative problem solving.
Right. I think just like you learned that stuff on the computer, though, it's just a matter of forcing yourself to learn it. And then once it's there, you'll be fine. You know,
100%. Going over to our good friend Don Clark from The Edge of Ohio. I don't know if that makes him like really close to something good or like just far enough away from something bad. But Don Clark, how you doing, bud?
Hey, I'm doing good. I'm really close to something bad, but I'm just on the other side of the line, so we'll take
it. Don, you said that there was a recent survey that said 40% of people would take a 10% pay cut to not have to commute and work from home. I feel like that sounds completely accurate, that you would take a little bit less money. Most people would. 10%, you're not going to miss that too terribly much, just to get back 100% control of your life flow.
Yeah, because you're, how much you're saving on, if you're working in a city, like parking fees, and then going out to lunch and all that stuff, plus not even to mention the time you're going to save not commuting. So, yeah, I think everybody having that year off with the pandemic, or, you know, some people working from home.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, this is really nice. I'd like to do this forever.
I feel like the guy that was really sweating 2020 was the dude that's like, literally works maybe, you know, 4-hour work day or 4-hour work week, because somehow or another, his old man or his parents, whatever, just gave him a trust where he owns a ton of commercial real estate. And so all he essentially needs to do is just send some people here and there and take some phone calls, and the big checks come in, and he's all of a sudden like, oh, everybody's working from home. Some of these companies in Costa Mesa will no longer need 5,000 square feet. Like, I feel like that's the guy last year was like, oh God, everybody needs to go back to work. We really, really need to get people back to work.
Yeah, I look at all those strip malls and just office buildings that aren't really close to anything interesting or cool. Or
yeah,
they're going to get torn down. They can't survive. There's just not enough demand for physical space like that.
It's insane to think about how real estate in America works, because not too far from my home, there's a shopping plaza. It's a, we'll say it's a California lower tier shopping plaza. It's a nice looking place. They just don't have a lot of the tenants that would keep you going over and over again. But they lost a Best Buy. You know, Best Buy moved out, and that space is now sent empty for, I guess we're probably going on like 3 years. I was like, that is such a huge footprint that I don't know who takes that over. And we just see that happening on the urban landscape over and over and over again. And whereas people lived in the cities, then they moved to the suburbs, and then people decided to go back to the cities, it'll be interesting to see, is that same cycle going to happen to where all these empty strip malls, does that get reclaimed commercially, or does that just get bulldozed down and becomes residential or something else? Like, I'm very, very fascinated to see where the future of the mall goes, because there's just now these huge like skeletons just sitting all across America that, as everything goes more and more online, what is the use for that space?
I bet it's going to be, I used to be an architect, and I was laid off in 08. And one of the last things I was working for was like commercial retail. And there's a big push for like mixed use, like residential, office, commercial, retail, that kind of entertainment all in one. So I could see all those dead strip malls, you know, if you inject housing right to there, well, there's your built-in kind of population.
Right.
So I bet that's where they're coming.
Why did you bail on architecture? Because 99% of the people don't have a fun job?
Yeah. So the last thing I worked on really full time was going to be the largest hotel in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this was 2008.
Oh, perfect timing.
Yeah, perfect timing. So, you know, it was reading all this news about everybody getting laid off. And we keep hearing from the upper management. There's like 200 people in the firm. Like, oh, don't worry, we got this under control. Everything's fine. And you know, I was stupid and I believed it and everything. And then one day I'm looking over the cubicles down the line and I see some guys getting phone calls, and they go to the conference room to come back real sad. And there's like another guy gets a call, comes back really sad. And I'm like, oh. Then I got a phone call. I'm like, oh, can we see you in the conference room? I'm like, yeah, here I come.
And
here
I go. Next thing you know, you're actually living the movie Office Space, right? You're sitting there with those two dudes who are giving you that shitty, like, negative performance review. I wouldn't say I've been missing work. So, Don, first off, it's nice to finally see your face after hearing your voice. You're the only guy that ever used the phone number for AID. I appreciate you for justifying that $17 a month.
I like to keep your investment paying, you know, just the slightest, smallest dividends
possible. I appreciate that. But this is our first time ever getting to meet virtually, and you wanted to show up today because you had a couple of things that you wanted to chat about with the gang. So what's going on in your world, bud?
Oh, so the good segue with the architecture thing. So I was going to be, you know, the big breadwinner, making all the money. And my wife was going to, she has a professional degree, but she was going to work more part-time, take care of the kids, that sort of thing. And right. that all got upended when I was laid off. And she, her career kind of advanced. And
what does she do?
Once we got used to the less money, she's a mental health therapist. She works with kids.
Mm. I feel like
schools now.
I feel like that's a job that will always have a demand. I said, I feel like that's a job that will always have a high demand.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, it's amazing what happens to even kindergartners. But anyway, so, you know, my kind of job was upended, and the money, once we got used to having the less money, you know, the freedom is really desirable. So I pursued my own business, making toys and other little wood things.
Yeah.
Happy Bungalow is the name.
The creator of the Hanukkah Steve menorah, which is one of my most prized possessions. Where is it? Oh, Steve's a little bit too far out of reach, but he's on the windowsill right next to me because I love that thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's, I hear you mention that every once in a while. I'm like, oh, that's really nice. Cause you never know when you're going to blindly send somebody something and they actually like it, you know? So
now that's
I always appreciate that when you mention it.
It's the greatest menorah Gentile's ever been given. So thank you so much.
And I think that me and Sean Moore are in the same category of a 12 tubes of Christmas sale that nobody bought anything for.
Yeah, there's a couple other people that joined
the menorah for.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. All
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
A little better though.
But anyways, sorry to derail you. So you were the architect. You were going to make the money. You get laid off in 08. The family pivots, getting used to the flexibility of you being freelance, but your wife also making money as a mental health expert. So where do we end up now?
So now, you know, three kids are all in school, mm-hmm. and you know, I drop them off, pick them up, do homework, that sort of thing. And
yeah.
I, you know, work for 5 hours during the day when they're gone. I get a good solid 5 hours. And
yeah.
So my wife now is making enough money where she can support the family pretty much by herself, you know, summer vacation included. So it's, I'm left wondering, well, what am I good for? What am I, what's my value? Even though I know my value is all the childcare and all the house stuff, and I renovate the house, and I do make actual some money, but I think it's that gender role getting flipped around,
sure.
you know, where, you know, I was just set to be the breadwinner, and then they got turned upside down on us.
So I'm not going to lie.
So it's
the moments in my life when Beth has, you know, lapped me in the amount of money that she's brought in. The first time it happens, it does, you know, and I'm not like this like bro male or whatever. I didn't play fucking sports. I was a skateboarder. I was a punk rocker. You know, all my best friends in school were chicks and stuff. So I cry, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm not like, you know, ultra tough guy, but my dad always drove the car when we were kids, you know? So my male role model was the one that was always in charge. He was the one that worked. And my mom, stepmom, was a, you know, a housekeeper or homekeeper, whatever that fucking stupid term is. And there's been a couple of times where, you know, Beth's business has really grown and she has made a serious amount of money in a, you know, a condensed amount of time. And the first time that happened, I was like, oh, this is some sort of weird male pride thing that I'm feeling right now, that my wife somehow would be fine if I got hit by a car. You know what I mean? Like she can do it all without me. And it wasn't ever that I doubted her, because I've always been her biggest cheerleader. And, you know, when I met her, I was like, this sucks. I've met somebody that would be the perfect person to go in business with. The only problem is she's my girlfriend and I really like fucking her. And that is obviously a huge contradiction. But once I saw how hard she worked and how bright she was and how little her boss respected her, because her boss was old school and really saw her as the girl at the age of, well, I got a girl that'll do that, which I hate when people say that, oh, you know, I emailed the girl that they have over there, or my girl does, you know, the social media girl. I'm like, no, those are fucking women. They got a W-2. They're doing stuff. Those are women. And so when Beth had asked her boss for a raise and he simply told her, it's not my fault you bought a house. And she called me crying because he literally, quote, called her a prima donna. I said, you just go back and tell him that you quit. It's that easy. You will work with me and we'll just escalate all of our plans. And so, you know, we were business partners, Don, but I had owned the business before her. And she looked a lot towards my leadership and how I had already had a decade of adjusting to the stress of no regular paydays. You know, like I made it easy for her to take that leap. And then once she took a step beyond me, there was definitely a little bit of like male mental shit in my mind of like, holy shit, my wife's making more money than me, like a noticeable more amount of money than me. And it did for like a brief second. I didn't ponder on it. It didn't depress me. I didn't have to figure it out. But there was a brief like sort of like kind of like when you just suddenly like stub your toe and you're like, oh my God, my fucking toe hurts. And that's all that you can see. And that your whole world is about your fucking toe for 30 seconds. And then you kind of go on down the road. But I do know what you mean, that it is a little bit of like, I didn't see my life being this way, or I never saw this type of an example or role model as a kid. So I kind of feel like I've skied out someplace where I'm not supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. And I know, like, I know in my head, that like it's fine and the relationship is fine and
yeah,
I'm in a good place and I'm living my dreams and et cetera, right? Best life ever. But in my heart, I'm like, oh, you're not doing enough because you're not making enough money.
Yes, I know that feeling.
Yeah, and it's like, well, we have enough money. Mm-hmm. You know, we're fine. We do everything we want and need. So what's the problem here, heart?
I think one of the things that it made me see, and I don't feel this way, but I got to see this perspective of there's been a lot of women over the years because of the way society works and because their husbands were the breadwinners that you could see where you would feel trapped in that relationship. Not that you can't leave, but how complicated it would be to leave because there's somebody else making money for you. And I don't feel that way, but I got to kind of see for a minute, I'm like, oh shit, Beth's making like serious money and like really contributing to our family and really helping us get to some of our goals way faster than we want. And there is that sudden feeling of like, I think that she'll still need me, you know? And it's funny to equate financial value with mental value or emotional value or
like self-worth
or how dependent we are upon each other and how much my success reflects her success and vice versa and all that stuff. But yeah, I'm not going to lie and act like that. I didn't feel a little bit rattled, but yeah, I'm not going to act like this didn't bother me or I didn't ponder this or this vibe didn't cross my mind. Just because, you know, my entire life, I always had more money than every girl that I ever dated. I was always further along than anybody that I ever had a relationship with. And so there is sort of an alpha type position that inevitably brings upon. And then when that's not there anymore, there is a bit of questioning your role in things. And, you know, one of the reasons why I work so hard at like the YouTube project that I have going is because I want this to be successful. And I want to be able to report back to my wife like, hey, you know, you held down the fort for a while to give me a little bit of the bandwidth that I needed to like evolve my business to get into something new. And I was able to do it and do it within a certain amount of time to get to a good earning spot. Like, I don't know about you, Don, with your personal stuff, but I feel like there was a clock going. There's like a clock ticking. And that clock is me getting to a certain level of success to justify what I'm doing for my relationship and for my family.
Yeah. Yeah. There definitely is. Like, I just turned 40 a couple of years ago. I know you hit 40, like sometime, you know, when Obama was president or something. So it's been a while, but there was definitely like, oh shit, you have not made it, you know, whatever it is, whatever vision of success I had in my head. And I'm like, you're not gonna make it if it hasn't happened now, probably. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So better time to start accepting things instead of just keep grinding it out for something that may never happen.
Or pivot around to a different mental perspective of, okay, so like, I'm probably not going to make these like financial benchmarks or this resume that I saw on paper, but I'm in a unique position to be an amazing partner with my wife so that when she comes home, there is a certain amount of like peace and clarity in the home. I have an unbelievable relationship with my children, and I have a chance to be a dad that my dad never was given an opportunity to be. And then what I'm interested about, Don, is what does someone like you, like, how do you forecast your future when, you know, at some point the third of these kids is going to fly out of the nest, and then this job that you will have ran for, you know, 18 to 25 years is no longer necessary anymore. Like, how do you count down to that day, or is that a dreaded day, or is it just changed by the hour and what kind of a shithead your kids are being?
Yeah. Well, so the immense silence that will fall over the house, it will be bliss. Cause there's times where I just got to tell them, just be quiet. My head cannot process any more information.
Yeah.
And then on the second point, I think if I ever work, you know, when I work an 8-hour day consistently, I do it on occasion now on holidays, and it feels so damn long. I'm like, oh my God, it's only 3:00. I am so tired. So that's going to be something. But yeah, I look forward to it mostly. I don't have any other skills. Like, I can't be an architect again. Like, haven't done that for a decade. So it's either, you know, make wood stuff or nothing, I guess.
Question for you. Maybe. When you left architecture in 08, the financial, you know, meltdown in 08, 09, it kind of sprung back pretty well by 10 or 11. Why did you not circle back around to architecture? Was that one of those things where you thought you would enjoy it way more than what you actually did?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was doing it part-time. My daughter she was 4 months old when I was laid off. So I was doing it part-time. And she was in daycare, and, then that was about 4 or 5 years. It was right when she was coming up to kindergarten, going to school. And I'd done the Happy Bungalow thing. I'd kind of gotten started up, and, I'm like, well, you know, I think I'll just keep part-time and I'll, or just drop it all together instead of part-time. Cause yeah, you know, I'm making enough money, and now at least she doesn't have to be in daycare. Oh, big sneeze. She doesn't be in daycare anymore. You know, so I can be with them after school, drop them off, pick them up. And so, you know, architecture was part-time for, you know, 4 or 5 years. And then I was like, well, I don't need this anymore. You know?
Yeah.
I don't need the long hours, because it's always a salary job and you're always expected to work 50 plus hours a week. I mean, it seems like the same as a lot of the graphic design career people that come on and talk. Architecture sounds about the same.
I really thought that I wanted to get into architecture because I love the idea of doing something creative. And I went to a huge high school that actually had an architectural program in it, and I excelled at it and I really enjoyed it. But there were a couple of things that were keeping me away from doing it. One was, it's fucking so expensive to go to school for that. And there was not $1 saved for my college education. Not that, you know, my old man, like, just, you know, was, you know, fast and loose with his money, because he wasn't. He's a very, very good saver. But just, there wasn't the extra money to put away for college tuition. If you want to go to college, you'd have to just figure that out on your own. So it's that middle class dilemma of, well, my parents make enough money to not be poor on paper, but they didn't make enough money to save for college. So your whole tuition thing is like an immense burden. And so that was something that kind of had to look at. But then when I really dove into architecture and I figured out that like 90% of it wasn't as creative or as fun as I thought it was going to be, that's when I bailed. And I remember, you know, in the mid 90s, graphic design, back then communication arts, it just wasn't a thing, you know? So when that door sort of just closed due to resources, I was really looking down the barrel of a loaded gun of like, so maybe this UPS job sticks and I load fucking airplanes at the Louisville Stanford Field terminal, you know, like that's, maybe I could become like a shift leader and be a union guy. I mean, that was literally
the benefits, man.
Yeah. But I mean, that was the future that I was looking at, because there was nothing creative on the landscape whatsoever. So everybody here, definitely kiss your mouse today, because technology and the internet has fucking saved us all. I'm going to hop over to my man, Natter, because I know that he showed up ready to play the fucking game today. Don, it was so nice to get to talk to you, bud. We've had a really nice, fun friendship for years now. And I just love this fucking job. Let me just say that I just love this job because I always create the content feeling like there's a friend in the room. And when I finally get to meet and see people for the first time that I feel like I've been friends with now for, you know, a decade, it's fucking awesome. It's the greatest reward that I get. So take that, Moneybags Beth. Hey, friends, thank you so much for listening to part one of today's episode where we have the gang on from the Circle of Trust to talk about whatever problems going on in their world. If you'd like to be a part of one of these recordings, we'll be doing it again in 2 weeks. Pay attention to the Circle of Trust Slack and the Circle of Trust over at AID.network to see exactly when that recording time is set up and any possible topics that we may be getting into. And if you'd like to join us on one of these conversations and hear the full version of today's episode and our archive of over 1,400 episodes, become a member of the Circle of Trust over at AID.network. If it's good enough for DKNG, Jason Edmonston, or the great Rich Kelly, I'm sure it's good enough for you. Hear part two right now at AID.network. And don't forget, today's episode is brought to you by our sponsor, Garm, who we're having our first ever design contest. Don't worry, we're not taking advantage of you. We're having fun with you. We want to see how you're using all of the Garm products over at garmcompany.com. Coupon code site-wide AID. If you create anything with Garm for your clients, for fun, for your friends, or to make fun of us, make sure you hashtag it on Instagram, hashtag Garm Nation. We're going to go through all of those and pick the top three and give out a lot of prizes like a free iPad Pro, which is one of the spaces where the Garm product line works best. Pick up something today over at garmcompany.com and let us see what you do with it. A hashtag Garm Nation on the Instagram. Let's get started with part two of WIFP. What's your fucking problem? Episode 15. Natter, what's going on, bud?
Just trying to survive these last few weeks.
What's been happening?
So I guess to really kind of go back a little bit further, I've been freelancing full time now for about a year.
Okay.
And that kind of came out of COVID. And I kind of started my own.
What were you doing before? Like, were you working in an agency?
Yeah, so I was an art director for a agency in New Jersey. It's like I would loosely call it an agency because it was essentially a company that was a manufacturing and signage company that then decided to get into becoming some sort of an agency inside of it. And so I was an art director for the agency inside of it, and we worked mainly with restaurants and retail. So anything from like a Jack in the Box, Burger King, to a Panda Express, Baskin Robbins, things like that.
All right. I'd be hungry all the time there, but keep going.
Definitely. So I was, an art director there for, the last, I guess, 2-3 years. Before that, I was a senior designer for them. And basically, you know, long story short, got laid off. And as I was sort of trying to figure out my next steps in the pandemic, you know, one of the things that I had spoken to my wife about, you know, just a long time ago in terms of like future planning was like, I just want to work for myself. I want to do my own thing.
Yeah.
And so that was like the time where she was like, you know what, why don't you just try it? If this is, you were already planning on leaving at some point, so go for it. And, I've been doing that for the last year or so now, and it's been going well. The only thing is over the past few months, or actually a few weeks, we got hit with a household problem that went from a, you know, a small, like, hey, this is like a $2,000 thing to no, this is going to be way bigger. And so was essentially a water leak that happened in one of the bathrooms from the previous owners that was kind of covered up.
Yeah.
And we just uncovered it about 2 weeks ago. And essentially like the floor had basically rotted out. almost entirely.
First off, I'm fascinated and shocked that anybody in New Jersey would do anything shady. That just does not sound like the Garden State whatsoever. I, as somebody who's been flying through the Sopranos, I am just shocked that there might have been a shady home inspection. So the $2,000 problem transferred into a how much problem?
It's more like 10 now.
Fuck.
And then just last week, while we were dealing with that, we were trying to get a new, we had everything ripped out and trying to get a new subfloor put in. And we have two dogs, mm-hmm. and one of our dogs ended up having an episode of like vomiting and like all this other stuff. And she's 15 years old, so she's an older dog.
Yeah.
And had to take her to the vet, and that ended up being like a 3-day stay.
Yeah.
And so then that,
that's always affordable too. That's affordable. It was, yeah. Is the dog still alive?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Luckily we just got her back.
Cause you know, I have the story of $5,000 in a leash. So you know,
yeah,
we could, it could always be a little bit worse, but so what you're saying is life is beating the shit out of you financially.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. Has your wife said anything to you about going, like maybe the freelance thing has ran its course, or she's still a team player and believes this is where you should be?
Still a team player, for
that's,
sure.
That's good.
Yeah, but, yeah. But and
let me guess,
you know,
you are feeling personally a little responsible and a little liable that, like, am I doing what I need to do to get us out of this mess? Because, you know, in a matter of weeks, we went from having X amount of bills to an additional $15,000 or $20,000 worth of bills. And yeah, we're just not making that kind of money to like rebound really quickly. That's where you're at mentally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, as somebody who spent a lot of their adult life in tens of thousands of dollars of debt, because I started a business the worst way that you could, off of credit cards, because nobody had saved any money for me. I moved out as a senior in high school, and I just literally had to figure out economics on my own. I would say this to you. You're not the first person that has ended up here before. And it sounds like a stupid cliche thing to say, but it's only fucking money, right? And all we have to do when we get behind is just make more and tighten up the way that we spend. And even if it takes you a couple of years to crawl out of this, dogs are a depreciation, right? Like all a dog does, you bring home a puppy and you just look at it and go, you're a fucking time bomb. You're going to break my heart and cost me an insane amount of money, but I fucking love you and you need a home, Uncle Larry. So come on home with us. So the dog's just like the worst investment you could ever make. So we've got that agreed upon. But putting $10,000 a new floor in your home, you're either going to enjoy that floor till the day you die, or you're going to get some of that money back when it's time to upgrade or do something else, move to a different part of the country or whatever the future has in store for you and your wife. So spending that kind of money on a home is way better than having to spend that kind of money on like a car or, you know, fucking bail money or a lawyer because you did something fucking stupid. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
Because you hit a kid coming home from the bar drunk. I mean, $10,000 on a home is a fucking great way to spend the money. But work through me this. Is this stress of all of this spending, is it getting into your psyche and affecting your creativity? Is it affecting your hustle? Is it affecting your self-esteem? Like, is it beating you up to the point where the damage is going beyond the money because you're so stressed out about the money that that is affecting your performance?
It's like hit or miss on the day, you know? It really, really just depends on, I guess, how I feel. And in terms of like, if it's sort of all kind of coming together in that moment. But, you know, luckily the good thing is there is a consistency of work that's coming in, which
there you go.
You know, is always good, but you know, there is always something in the back of my head that's going like, what's going to happen when, you know, X, Y, or Z.
Yeah. I mean, that's why one of the things one of the things that helped me claw everything we could do to get our family out of debt was that was when I started to realize the power of